All right, I got Will Johnston on the show today. He is a former collegiate athlete, Navy SEAL, and now mental performance coach. Will, welcome to the show, brother.
Joel, thanks for having me on, man. I'm excited to be here.
Dude, excited to jump into things with you. So as far as I understand, man, former D1 collegiate basketball player and then turned Navy SEAL. I'm just really curious, you know, just to jump things off. I mean, before people don't understand, like, you're at the highest of high levels and now you train other athletes and high performers to do exactly what you did. But what, you know, being a collegiate basketball and reaching it to that D1 level, I was just thinking, like, man, why didn't he go to the pros? What was this transitionary period that went from, you know, possibly going in the pros to then Navy SEALs, transition to becoming a Navy SEAL?
Yeah, I think my story is a little bit unique in that I wasn't this huge recruit coming out of high school. I really only got recruited by a few D1 schools. And what I ended up doing was going to Virginia Tech and walking on. So both of my parents went to Virginia Tech. I'd been going to football, basketball games since I was a little kid. And so I knew I wanted to go to Virginia Tech and always hoped that I would be able to develop into this recruit that would get offered a full scholarship at Virginia Tech. And, you know, senior year comes around and no scholarship offers come. And so I just stayed committed to going to Tech and hoped that I would be able to get an opportunity to prove myself to the coaches. I had contact with them and they were potentially going to offer me just a practice player position. And so the reason I go into that backstory is I definitely didn't have that talent to go play in the NBA. And I knew that. But what I did have was a really strong work ethic. And I developed some grittiness or mental toughness along the way. I think a lot in due to a lot of the mentors that I had. And so I was able to work my way up from a practice player to walk on to, by the end of my sophomore year, I was on full scholarship and a starter. And so I realized in that time, okay, even if you're not extremely talented, even if people aren't telling you you're the best, you can tell that to yourself and have that inner confidence and you can outwork that talent. And so by learning that lesson, I went into my senior year and I was still like, you know, maybe I still have a shot to go play professionally. I knew I could play overseas. NBA was very distant dream. And so comes my senior year. And then my head coach at the time, Buzz Williams, who's now head coach at Texas A&M, he gave me a book on the Navy SEALs. And I read that book and everything just changed. I knew that that was my trajectory after that.
Dude, what was it about this? Why did he give you a book about the SEALs? Like, it almost felt like, hey, you're not going to make it in the NBA, but you're pretty gritty guy. You should go read this book. Like, what do you think he was thinking about you?
Yeah, he was. So it was after our preseason boot camp was what we call it. It was like this 2-week thing. You wake up at 4 a.m., you go for a few hours in the morning, you come back, and it's just a grueling process. And I could have kind of stood out during that process of, he's going to push past when he's tired. It doesn't really matter what he's faced with. I kind of stood out in that regard of pushing past obstacles. And so when the media asked him about it, like, how'd that boot camp go? He was like, you know, I got this guy, he's a senior. He's our captain. He's Navy SEAL like tough. And then I heard that quote and I was like, what is this Navy SEAL stuff? You know, I never had any intention of going into the military at all. And then I asked him about it. I was like, what is that quote? And so then he gave me this book called Fearless. Highly recommend the book about this guy, Adam Brown, SEAL Team 6 operator. Read the book and was like, whoa, like, this is the ultimate passion. These guys are willing to lay their lives on the line for what they do. And I'm a person that's huge into doing what you're passionate about, regardless of money or other things. And so I read that book, loved the passion aspect, loved the values aspect, the brotherhood. Was at a time in my life where I really wanted to push myself, was being told these things, oh, he's Navy SEAL like tough. And me and myself, am I really? And so asking that question, it was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to challenge myself and I want to be a part of this brotherhood where values and passion are so important.
Dude, I love that. I can relate to that. When I was 18, I had the same kind of feeling. I almost went into the military for exactly those same reasons. And I remember my dad, I was 18 years old. It was around the year 2000. He was, the Iraq war, I think, was going on. And my dad's like, hey, man, they might come out with a draft. I mean, that was like, I guess, like what parents were thinking about. And my dad would like ask me, like, are you okay? And I'm like, man, I'll do whatever for this country. I was just so passionate. I was, and I just loved the idea too. It wasn't, I loved the idea about mind, body, soul. And I thought in the military, you had to be tactical with your mind, but you also had to have some physical aspect. And I liked that. I thought I'd be able to do both. I ended up not doing that. And then I, of course, ended up choosing a lifestyle and police work. So I did end up fulfilling some of that job. Mm-hmm. For you, curious, when going to the Navy SEALs, was there anything that surprised you? Like, what was the most surprising thing about becoming a SEAL?
I think the thing that was most surprising was how shitty the cold was. I had a strong foundation physically with playing basketball collegiately at a high level and went in and it was completely different shape, but I still had that physical background. You know, I could transition into running long distances, swimming long distances, doing a lot of calisthenics versus weights. And so all the physical stuff that we did was manageable. And I think it's manageable to 95% of the American population if you really try to push yourself physically. You don't have to be an Olympic athlete to go be a Navy SEAL. The thing that I realized that was the most challenging and that surprised me the most was the other stuff. And that was sleep deprivation, specifically what I mentioned in the beginning, the cold. Like, that was just shocking to me. I remember the first time we got into the water for what they call surf immersion, basically getting you to the point of hypothermia to see if you will be able to stand it without going to ring the bell to quit. And I just remember sitting there for the first time being so cold, was like, is this what my life is going to be like for the next few months and in this BUDS training? And really coming to that realization, like, wow, this is going to suck. But I think what came to my mind right after that thought was, well, all these other guys are doing it. All these other guys have gotten through this before. Why can't I? And so I think that was a big help when I was going through those really cold and mentally challenging situations.
Dude, I love that. How often do you think now, because now you're an entrepreneur, businessman, high performance coach, how often when setbacks come into your life now, does that ever, like, that image kind of come back into you, or maybe you're just facing failure, or what we call failure, disappointment? Do you go back to that moment and go, yeah, but like other people have done this, like, why can't I get through this moment?
Yeah. Yeah. I think once you go through a situation like that, you come up with a belief about yourself and that becomes a part of your identity. And once you have that part of your identity, like, I'm the type of person that overcomes this type of challenge, fill in the blank with whatever it may be, then it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be sleep deprivation, it could be cold, it could be going through a very difficult relationship, a breakup, a loss of a loved one. You're just the type of person that overcomes those challenges. And so when I do come across this nowadays, I get to a point where I'm like, okay, this is just kind of what I do. Like, I'm going to find a way through it. Even if it does suck, even if it does, I feel uncomfortable while I'm doing it. It's just very helpful to remind myself back to that situation and what became ingrained into my identity because of it.
Yeah. I really want to dive deeper on identity. Before I do though, at any point when you were in training, did you ever think like, man, this sucks, I actually might tap? Was that ever even did you ever like think of that or no?
One time, and it was in Hell Week on Tuesday night. So we had been going for 3 days straight, 2 days straight at that point. I think it was 2.5 days straight. And when I say straight, like no sleep, no stop, like you are going constantly. The only time you do get a little bit of break is during the meals. And even during the meals, sometimes you just sit on your boat getting sprayed in the face with cold water. So there's really no moments of comfort. And so Tuesday night, I remember specifically, I hadn't slept, been going so long, I'm physically exhausted, mentally exhausted, and we're sitting in the water doing the, you know, who knows how long we're going to be in the water for. It's going to be freezing. The night has just started. It's midnight. You know, you're not stopping. And I just remember being freezing cold and thinking at that point was like, do I just go up to the bell and quit? If I do, I get a warm blanket. They're handing out coffee, warm donuts, obviously trying to tempt you to do it. And I really considered it. That was really the only time I remember ever considering, am I going to quit? And what stopped me from quitting was, so we were allowed to write, the only thing you're allowed to personalize is your cover, like your hat, basically. You call it a cover in the military. So I wrote inside the cover my mom's name, my dad's name, my sister's names, people that were extremely important to me, and then a quote. It was actually a quote from The Office, the TV show, Lord, bear me strength. And so I specifically remember tapping into my support system and thinking about, okay, if I go quit right now, I have to immediately go call my sisters, my parents, my coaches that supported me, my friends, and let them know I couldn't do it. And just the thought of that, in addition to that quote of Lord, bear me strength, which made me laugh in the moment, which I think humor is such a big deal when you're going through really hard times. Those two things, you know, shook that thought out of my mind, and it never came back, thankfully.
That's incredible. And I just think about humor, using humor as an anchor to like a pattern interrupt you from doing something maybe you don't want to do. I think that's great. And I use humor not often. I should access it more, but I'll use it actually with my kids when there's some friction between us. And I always find that if I use some lightheartedness, or I'm silly, or I use humor, even with my wife, those are usually the best ways to like pattern interrupt if there's some friction between us. It always works the best out of everything. You could talk to them seriously. You could talk, raise your voice. You could do all these other things, but humor seems to always be the one that changes the entire dynamic of what's happening in the house. So I love that you said that. That's amazing.
Right. It works in any situation too. And the reason I got that was from reading Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And he was using that in concentration camps during the Holocaust. So if someone can use humor in a situation that I consider to be like the most dire, horrific situation that you could be in, and it works for them in that situation, then what situation can't it work in? And so, yeah, I think it's just a super, super effective tool.
Remind me, because I've read part of Frankl's book on audio. How did he use humor? I know, didn't he always try to like look for something that was, he was actually would be funny with other people he was in contact with. Isn't that what he did?
Yeah. Yeah. So he was tending to the people that were basically on death's door. They were super, super sick, super starved. He would be attending to them at their bedside table. And what his self proclaimed duty was to go around and tell them jokes, not only to help them and give them some sort of support before they inevitably were going to pass, but to give them some sort of humor. And by giving that humor to others, it helped him as well. And so just, you know, his job was, I'm going to go provide them with some humor, some way of being able to actually enjoy something before their life ends. And so by doing that to others, he was able to take a lot of meaning and just, like you were saying, pattern interruption in that process.
Yeah. And you just reminded me, he had like such a great framework. I think we could all just look to his framework. And I think you probably did the same thing in Navy SEAL training. I think he had like, he was going to find one person he could make smile for the day. He remembered everybody's name, like the guards' names, and he would focus on incidents to like embed in his mind, so that later when he went to go write his famous book, he knew everything. He would remember all this information. And then one of them was humor. I think one was doing something like nice for somebody. So he had all these rules that he had to do. And just like you, I mean, I think you kind of did the same thing, and you looked at that cover, which was kind of the pattern interrupt. And it reminded you of like, it brought you back to like, hey, this is the framework. This is what I got to follow. This is the code I'm going to follow. And what a great framework for tough times, using his kind of metric, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I wasn't even like intentionally doing it. It wasn't like, oh, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl did this, I'm going to do it. Like, it just kind of came to me. It was probably a subconscious thing after reading his book, because that did have a profound impact on my life. But it was just, you know, I thought about that quote and I just started laughing while I was in there. I was like, if you're laughing, you're also, you can't be two things. You can't be laughing and thinking of the people that love you and also in complete dire suffering inside your mind. It's one or the other. And so once you pattern interrupt and go to that direction, it's one or the other. So it was very helpful.
Yeah. Dude, talk to me about identity. You mentioned I had to create like a new identity. And I hear this a lot from guys in law enforcement, military. A lot of these guys are transitioning out of those branches. They're looking to start something new. And they always talk about identity. Like, I was a police officer for 20 years, or I was in the military for 30. Like, and they don't like, that's who I was. That's who I am. And now I'm trying to form this new identity. And it seems to always get in people's way. And especially if they're, you know, trying to break habits, or they're trying to, like the people that you work with, high performance athletes, they're trying to create a new identity to break through in whatever their sport is. How do you help them kind of cultivate this identity? And maybe they need to get rid of an identity that they have.
Yeah, totally. I think in simple form, your identity should not be based on what you do. It should be based on who you want to be and who you are. And it's so, so easy to get your identity tied up if you're not taught that, and we're not taught that. And so I went through the same thing. I was the basketball player, the Navy SEAL Will, versus Will, who was a basketball player and who was a Navy SEAL. And that subtle difference is so huge. And so what you have to do is, ideally, you do it proactively while they're within that whatever high performance domain, is help them form those traits of who they want to be and what's important to them before they transition out of it. Otherwise, you kind of hit that identity crisis when you're not a Navy SEAL, or when you're not a CEO or running this big business, and those things are taken away from you. What you do, you're left with who you are. And so ideally, you start that process while they're going through that. But if it doesn't happen to happen in that ideal way, the process is just identify, who do you want to be? It's really simple. Who do you want to be? What's important to you? What do you value? And so just asking yourself those questions, and there's a little bit more of a process that I'll go into with them, but in its basic form, who you are is more important than what you do. And when you have that as part of your identity, that is where you should start.
Yeah, massive. I learned this phrase a long time ago, be, do, have. And it sounds kind of similar to what you're talking about. Like, yeah, figure out the three questions you ask. If you can do that, you're going to be the person, this identity that you want to be. Then you can go do, have the Olympic gold medals, have the wealth, have the success, all those other things. But you got to be that person first. And if you don't know what that is to be, then you got no North Star to go to, it sounds like.
Totally. I think it sounds like a Joe Dispenza type quote, just being, and then the rest will follow. I don't know what the exact quote is, but it's just all about that being, and then the what's and the how's kind of follow after that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know then it's funny here. You're such a highly, qualified person already, just being a Navy SEAL and just doing and being a D1 athlete, but then you decided to go out and get a master's in sports performance. I'm curious, man, like, what did you learn from that, getting a or did you learn anything that you didn't already know from being a Navy SEAL and a D1 athlete?
Yeah, so much. I think education is extremely important, and also having experience is extremely important, but what worked for me may not work with some of the people that I work with. And being able to find ways to better relate, provide them with other tools. Obviously, everyone has their own perspective and their mind works in different ways. What works for one person is not going to work for everybody. And so if I were to have gone in, oh, I was a D1 basketball player, I was a Navy SEAL, I did these things, this is what I did, here is the formula that works. Yeah, it may hit with a good amount of people, but it's not going to hit with everyone. And I wanted to have that educational academic background to kind of support my personal experiences. And so I just learned a lot of different tools. I think some of them didn't resonate with me, but I will bring them up with clients that I work with, and they do resonate with them. And that's totally fine. It's not about what works for me. It's about how can they improve their life? How can they maybe shift their perspective to think in a different way, which unlocks a behavior that they, you know, been wanting to do, whether it's out on the field court for an athlete or whether it's in the business realm or whatever it is. We're all performers in our own rights. But it really was about finding ways to relate and provide actionable tools to people that may not relate with my personal experiences.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is there a strategy or a tool or a tactic? I mean, you're already a high performer and you've been practicing high performance really since you were in high school till now. But is there anything that you've taken that's new for you that you've added into maybe your repertoire of performance? And I don't know, maybe it's like meditation or visualization, something that like you never did as a SEAL, but like now you find tremendous value and you're like, man, I wish I had done this more often. And it's given me so many great results. Anything that you've added?
Yeah, totally. I think when I was going through and playing basketball and going through SEAL training and being an active duty SEAL, it was all about go, go, go. Like I had no breaks. And what I realized was that growth comes from stress plus recovery. And I think for a lot of like highly driven and motivated people, that recovery aspect is difficult. It's like you can sleep when you die, you know, that type of mindset. And yeah, when I was in college, like I prided myself on getting only like 4 hours of sleep or just being the guy that was always going and never hitting the brakes. And while that was super helpful for me and, you know, driving the results that I got, I was also continuously burnt out, super, super stressed, and that really weighed on my mental health. And so I think the biggest thing that I realized was to frame that recovery piece different for those really high performers. And that was not, okay, just allow yourself that recovery, but can you be disciplined enough, mentally tough enough to give yourself that recovery and that time off? And I think framing that in that way is a really helpful strategy to help those athletes, because it really is. You need that recovery, those, you know, whether it's meditation, naps, mindfulness, you know, yoga nidra, NSDR type, those new modalities. All those are extremely important and necessary. And sleep, obviously, is probably the number one. But can you be mentally tough and disciplined enough to be able to do those things? Because those things are super necessary. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I learned through going through that I did not utilize when I was a SEAL. And I know how it affected me and the detriments that it can cause when you don't implement those things.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. How do you like to implement it in your life? And what I mean is, do you actually like schedule in your schedule, like a reminder, hey, it's noon, I am going to actively take 15 minutes and just practice some yoga nidra or practice a meditation, and then I'll come back to work. Is that how you do it? Because I know for me, if I don't schedule things, I just find out, Will, I don't do it.
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. Like it used to be, once I learned about it and felt how effective it can be and just really like reducing my stress and getting me into that calmer state of mind, that better focus that I had with it and just feeling better mood wise, everything was improved by doing it. I first started off just like that, like, okay, I'm going to just do it sometime this afternoon. And then it comes that afternoon, you're like, no, I could grind out another 20 more minutes here. You know, it's just like, it never comes. Like you'll never be like, okay, I'll just do it now. So for me, I think some people can do it like that. But for me, if I don't schedule it at a certain time, right now I'm just doing it at 2 p.m. unless I have a meeting, I'll just do it, you kind of shift forward or backwards. But that middle afternoon is typically when I feel a little drop in energy. And so I'll just go do 15 to 20 minutes of NSDR. It was very difficult at first because I was like 15 to 20 minutes of, I'm just taking away this time. This is just a waste of time.
Yep.
But then that perspective shift, again, can you be mentally tough enough to implement this knowing that all the benefits from it, it's going to improve the amount of stress. So you decrease your stress. It's going to improve your focus. It actually improves baseline dopamine levels. Research has shown it can increase it up to 65%, which drives your motivation. So all these benefits, knowing what the benefits are and scheduling it into my routine. Obviously need that schedule or else inevitably I'll just skip over it.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, very cool. That's helpful for me too. And I like that you do block that in. I always do morning visualization, but what I've started realizing is that's great for me for priming the day and just getting me in that mindset. But I've realized I need a second part of the day where I can come back and kind of downregulate, and also like that afternoon dip, and even just as a way to like kind of like shift from being the entrepreneur dad and then going and being a dad now. And I need something, and I've found that breath work and just like you said, some of these other tactics have been very helpful for me before I transition out of my office, my home office, and into the family or dad life. It's been really helpful. So yeah, I love that you said that.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear about, you know, question to you, what your morning visualization looks like.
Yeah, so it's so for me, what I do currently is I'm doing a combination of I'm either doing a little bit of breath work with like some type of guided item, either meditation, maybe it's some kind of like brain tap or, you know, binaural beats or something. And then I do have an audio visual thing like a brain tap. There's another one called the David. I don't know if people have heard of that. And it flickers lights, like a visor you wear, and it flickers lights to put your brain in a state of either alpha or theta or delta. So I actually notice a difference. I've noticed a difference with that. And I think for me, because I have such a hard, difficult time visualizing and quieting my brain, I do like attacking it from every angle, the visualization with the lights, the actual earphones. And so I will do that. And then what I've been doing right after that is actually writing down on a paper, like what I want to manifest, what I want to create today or in my life today and moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I've been diving deep into visualization recently. I think it's one of the most underutilized tools that's super, super effective if done right. And I think those modalities that you're talking about, binaural beats especially, are extremely effective because they put you into that state. You know, so a lot of times you meditate or you do deep breathing to get into this brainwave state that helps facilitate whatever it is that you're trying to do. And so what I found is that the range between 7 to 8 hertz frequency, which is right on that alpha theta border, gets you into that relaxed yet focused, concentrated state that's really helpful for visualization. And also you use binaural beats for when I'm trying to focus, like focused work, but different frequency. But I think people don't understand fully yet what the power of visualization can do, and understanding that it rewires your brain. It literally helps you form different pathways in your mind so that you can thus form different habits. And a lot of neuroplasticity involved with that. But it's just wild to me, some of the new research that's coming out, that the exact same areas of your brain are activated when you visualize as when you're physically doing that action.
Oh, wow.
Which was kind of surprising to me, but makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it's totally underutilized. And it's one of those things for me, it's difficult to turn off that part of my brain. I think similar to like what you said, but I know it's necessary and I know it's powerful. So I just keep coming back to it. And I had a coach a long time ago tell me like, oh, if you're bored of doing it, like, oh, you're getting bored. Like you feel like you did that once for a week and it worked well, but the next week you don't want to do it. He's like, do it more. Do it. You know what I mean? That means you actually need to keep doing it. Because you're getting bored, man. Every time I get bored with it, I just remind myself of that, because that means I need to come back to it and I'm probably missing something. Because for me, that's that moment, Will, where I will split. I tried that. It worked a little bit, but then I didn't see that great of a result. And so I think for me, it's really like, well, let me dive deeper. Why am I trying to run and go check out the next shiny object, right?
Right, right. I think there's also kind of a misconception as well, is that it's kind of woo-woo, like I'm going to just bring everything into my life. You know, it can be like that, and people do use it like that, and it can be effective, but that's not really what the research is showing, and that you're not just going to bring all these things. Again, I'm not dissing on that. I think it can be helpful in a certain light if you believe in that. But I think there is that misconception that if you're just visualizing that all of a sudden you're bringing these spiritual forces into your life and all that. So I definitely like to break that myth and misconception, knowing that there is many, many research studies that are based in not just that woo-woo spiritual aspect, but kind of more tangible and concrete.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Joe Dispenza, I mean, he's one of the greatest right now doing the research and like proving that it works. Mm-hmm. And so showing it. So I think that's really helpful for people like myself too. It's like, wow, like this isn't just woo-woo. Like we're seeing the research showing why it works. So it's really right. Neat.
Totally.
Wanted to talk to you about, I was just thinking about high performers, right? And to take an athlete or to take an Olympian and get them from Olympian to actually the podium, it's a big difference. But Tony Robbins always says this phrase, it's a 2 millimeter shift. It's a 2 millimeter difference. And that's what separates someone from greatness and never hearing about them. How do you get that person from that level Olympian to then podium? Like, what is that 2 millimeter shift you usually see that's blocking people from getting there?
Yeah, I think it's self-regulation when you're faced with obstacles and challenges, and getting yourself back on that confident, driven, whatever adjectives describe you at your best, getting back into that mind state as quickly as possible. And I think the difference, it really is just that slight, like you said, like 1 or 2% little shift that can do it. And I think the difference between the greats, really, really great, highest performing at what you do and whatever endeavor you're doing, versus the mediocre or pretty good or even really good, just not that separating difference, is the speed at which you're able to get back. Mm. And we're all going to be faced with shitty situations. Whether it's an athlete out on the court, they make a mistake, a ref makes a bad call, they start losing, whatever it is, you're going to get frustrated. You're going to get down on yourself. Same in the business world. You don't make a sale. Maybe you lose money on some ad campaign. You have an employee that's not doing well for you, is actually bringing you guys down. You're going to run into some sort of challenge that's going to put you in a state of not helpful or productive emotions, whether it's frustration, anger, just rage at whatever is going on. The greats are able to get themselves back to that point of their highest quality quickly. And that is what I found to be the biggest separator, is because when shit doesn't go your way, you're going to get frustrated. Even the highest performers, think of like a Tom Brady, LeBron James, Novak Djokovic, for sports, whatever it is, you're going to get frustrated. You're going to get angry. Things aren't going to go your way. But how quickly can you get back? And I found that there's, and this is coming from them too, this is straight from their interviews, the horse's mouth. And I think being able to self-regulate and get yourself back on that, whatever tools, techniques, strategies you use, that's the key.
Yeah, dude, I never thought of that. That's a great one. That is really key. Yeah. Self-regulation and being able to put yourself back in that state quickly of mm-hmm. being a winner. Wow. That's yeah. powerful.
Yeah. So I think just to go into a couple of the strategies, just to provide people some actionable takeaways, I think typically what I teach is the breath is the number one go-to. So you find yourself in that situation, say, you didn't make the sale, or the ad campaign failed, or something really shitty happened in your business, or you're an athlete and things aren't going your way. When you get to that situation, understand that you're going to be frustrated. You're going to be pissed off. You're going to get emotional at whatever it is. Just take literally 3 breaths, just breathing in through the nose and then just exhaling out through the mouth, really focusing on that exhale, knowing that impacts your physiology and literally slows down your heart rate to bring you back down to that parasympathetic state. So that's number one. Number two is mantras. I'm big on that. I thought, I will just say, of it in a low light when I was a SEAL. Just like, what is this mantra stuff? You know, I just looked down on it for sure. But when I think about it, even when I was a SEAL, I was using it, just maybe not in that context. Maybe I was just, this is my phrase I go to myself, whatever it is. But for me, it was always, you're effed up. And what I meant by you're effed up, like I would just tell that to myself. It meant I can push past challenges. I can handle whatever is put in front of me. Like I'm just a little wired, a little different where I can do this. And to me, what that does is help me focus on what I need to do to rebound from this negative, this obstacle, this challenge. It puts me thinking about, okay, how do I need to go over, around, under, through, whatever it is. Like that little mantra gets me focused on the right things. And I think it's unique to everyone. Everyone has a different word, keyword, phrase, whatever you want to call it, mantra, that helps direct them in a productive and useful way, focusing on the right things to overcome these challenges. So the breath, having a mantra to help you focus on the right thing. And then third would be going forward, and that is segmenting. And what I mean by that is just breaking everything you're about to do into small bite-sized chunks. And so I know our buddy, Scott Ferguson, likes to use the phrase, inch by inch is a cinch, by the yard it's hard. And so when you're dealt with something that's really challenging, big setback, obstacle, whatever it is, those examples I provided earlier, take a couple deep breaths, go to what's going to help you focus on the right thing, and then break it down into just one thing at a time. Take care of that one thing, and then get yourself back into that right state of mind, focused on what you need to, one little thing at a time. And I've found that to be extremely effective.
Yeah, that's so good. I never do the mantra. And it's funny that you're saying that, because I remember a long time ago reading Mark Divine's book, one of his first books. Anybody knows Mark Divine, he's a former Navy SEAL as well. And I think it was actually The Unbeatable Mind was what the book was called.
Yep.
And he talked about going through SEAL training. And he said, similar to you, he's like, I wasn't like the best athlete. Like I was athletic and in good shape. But he said, when the tough times came and, you know, he was mentally just out of it, he would start singing himself a song, a mantra. And it was some like cliche song that we all know. It's like feeling good, looking good, smiling good. It was something like that. And he would just visualize himself like, you know, just that was what he just kept saying to himself, repeating. Everyone else is just sitting there dying, tapping out, ringing the bell. And he was just in his own little world repeating that mantra. And so, man, what a great performance hack that I would have never really thought about.
Yeah, he was actually the one where I learned about the breathing aspect, because he taught box breathing was like his big thing, you know, four in, hold for four, out for four, hold for four, and repeat. But yeah, I don't really remember the mantra that he used, but I think that's kind of hilarious, because I mean, it really doesn't matter what it is. I'll give you an example. When I got out of the SEAL teams, I started transitioning into running ultra marathons. And hilarious as it sounds, I wanted to be as light on my feet as possible. And, you know, you're running 50 miles, 70 miles at a time. The more that you're light on your feet, the less pain you're going to feel towards the end. And I would just tell myself, Tinkerbell, be light as Tinkerbell. And I'm saying this to myself. I probably said that to myself like over 10,000 times over the course of some of these ultra marathons. And, you know, no one knew about that. I don't think anyone's known about it until right now. But whatever it is that helps you, it really doesn't matter what it is. If it guides you in that right, puts you in the right state of mind and gets you focused on the right things, that's all that matters.
Yeah. So good, dude. So good. Hey, man, tell us about just some exciting projects that you're working on, or what's new and good that we can expect from you.
Yeah, so I just started my LLC to do one-on-one consulting. Was working with someone else previously, but broke off and just started Mind-Driven Performance LLC. So just continue what I was doing, working mainly with athletes on their mental performance and all things mindset related to help them perform better, overcome obstacles, or just if they are not really facing a lot of obstacles, just enhancing their performance and just, you know, maybe they feel like they've reached a bar and they just want to push past that. So working with athletes on that of all sports, also working now with another former SEAL who has created this program that is based on traumas, using traumas, knowing that our traumas, or the way that he defines it, as a perceived loss of control, not necessarily meaning that you have been faced sexual abuse or seen someone die, you know, not an extreme trauma, but little things like maybe as a kid you were left on the sidewalk and weren't picked up by your parents, or, you know, just little stuff like that forms these lessons and these belief systems and strategies in our minds that really ultimately help us get to the top of whatever we're doing. It's leads to our biggest success, but and not in that environment, it also leads to our biggest kryptonite and really holds us back. And, you know, you see these time after time, people are about to reach their goals and then they self-sabotage because they're basing what they're doing now off of previous lesson that they learned from their past. That's just ingrained in them as part of their belief system, their strategy, but then it won't let them get to the highest ceiling that they can. And so I heard him describe this when I had just been connected with him through several connections. And then he brought me on. So now I'm going to be facilitating his program that he's running based on a couple of masterminds and all that. So really, really excited about that opportunity, because I think that is going to help a lot of people, and also enjoying that because that's outside of sport and I don't want to strictly stick with athletes, although I do love that. It's a nice way of diversifying what I'm doing. And then the last thing I'm doing is a project that will be launched soon. I can talk about it more once it's fully launched, but working with future professional athletes as they transition into the draft process of various sports.
Yeah, very neat. And just to say about the SEAL thing, I think the guy that you're going to be working with, it makes complete sense. I always, when I did a lot of reflection on my own life, like a lot of my success and a lot of the reasons why I was driven to succeed was because I never felt worthy. And that was just a belief that I took in from childhood. And so because I didn't feel worthy, I was like always going after, I'm like, I got to be the best. I got to achieve. I need to get validated by my mom. I want people to love me. And so if you see me doing good things, I'll get validated. But that also didn't transfer well in my marriage and with my kids. It made me a great cop too, because I was able to detach emotionally in these scenes where, you know, being emotionally involved would not have been safe. And then you bring that attitude of not being emotionally involved or detached into relationships with your family and your kids, not the greatest formula. So I can totally relate. I think that's going to be really powerful and help a lot of people. So that's exciting.
Yeah, totally. I think, so let's learn this lesson to survive that situation. And when you survive that situation, it ingrains in you, okay, this is what I need to do. And you may not even be conscious of it. Like I was saying, it's your subconscious mind that's just putting you in these situations that constantly self-sabotaging you. Yeah, it may have helped you in the past and in that situation to be able to be a really high performer, hard charger, super successful in what you're doing. But then at the same time, it's just limiting you and you constantly find yourself in struggle, stress, and maybe you're not aware of what that driving factor is. And so I just, yeah, very excited about that. I think it's a really cool program that he's developed out, and he's a freaking genius. Just the way that his mind works is really cool learning from him. So yeah, excited about that.
Yeah, that's cool. Dude, I want to wrap things up and ask you some final round questions. But before I do, just anything I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
Honestly, no. I think one thing I really like to talk about is purpose. And we talked a little bit about that as far as identity and when we were talking about that. But I think always starting with purpose and why. Being really intentional about the things that you're doing in your day and knowing why you're doing everything on your checklist, not just going to do things just to check things off the box, whether it's, you know, you're making time to do this NSDR, 15 minutes of rest recovery, or whether it's spending time with your kids or your wife, or, you know, not something that's necessarily personal growth or improvement related, asking yourself why you're doing those things is, I think, extremely important, because it brings intention into your day and it helps you live a more meaningful existence on a daily basis.
Yeah, great recap on that. I like that you brought that up. And I just think about, I like that you brought up the checklist thing, because I know sometimes I can fall into that rut too, where I know I need to do this because this is what high performers do, but it just becomes a checklist mentality. And even some of the guys that I coach in my program, you know, one of the requirements I have them do is some type of physical activity daily. And it doesn't have to be a lot, right? But I think, you know, some people would say, come on, Joel, like, are you crazy? Like, you mean to be an elite dad and husband, you need to be like in shape? And my answer used to not be, well, no, I mean, you can be somewhere. But now my answer has changed. Like, actually, yeah, it matters, man, because you're going to be inflamed. You're going to be overweight. You're not going to have energy to play with your kids. You're going to not feel as confident as you are when you work out. And it's just really interesting now. And I've seen a lot of guys too that came into my program looking for upgrading their marriage, but they lost 30 pounds, Will. Like, and so it's all tied together. And so I think to your point, if someone's like, oh, Joel, why is he making me work out every day? This is so stupid. But if he can reconnect to his purpose, like you're saying, no, my purpose is to be an amazing father and have energy to play with my kids and have respect and lead them by showing them what I'm doing, then working out for 10 minutes a day makes sense.
Right, right. It's just like you said, it's that subtle difference of Joel's making me work out versus I'm working out for my wife, for my kids, for my energy. And that is the biggest difference, because one is sustainable and one is not. And if you're just doing it for someone else, that's never going to be sustainable in the long run. And why even do it if it's not sustainable? So
yeah, I
just think that's super huge to remind yourself on a daily basis why you're doing the things that you're doing.
Yeah, so good. Okay, now you're forcing me to ask you another question.
Okay.
So what's your purpose?
So my purpose is to be driven and kind, to continuously work on improvement, which means I don't have this written in my actual purpose statement, but physical, mental, financial, spiritual. So to be driven and kind, constantly work on my improvement, to be connected with others, to work on the relationships that matter most to me, and to never take life too seriously. So those are my buckets: to be driven and kind, if I'm that, if I'm working on improvement, if I'm working on the relationships, those connections that matter most to me, and I'm enjoying the process, then I am living what I feel like I was put on this earth to do.
Yeah. Wow. So good. I'm glad you brought that. I'm glad I asked
you. Yeah. What's yours? I want to know yours now that you asked me.
Similar. I have my purpose statement written out, but essentially it's very similar to yours. It's to create massive impact in people's lives and create perpetual quantum leaps in their lives and the people that I'm around. So really anybody that comes into contact, that I come into contact with, I leave them off better than they were before, and to be of service. And I have it written out. It's like to live an opulent, harmonious life. And so, that's what it is.
Love that, man. I botched mine, not word for word. You know, it's hard to remember when you're put on the spot, but, that's awesome, man. How long would you say that's been your purpose? Is that something that you feel like you've always had, or is that some newer development?
Yeah. So it's something that I've recently actually done, probably in the last month. And I think I've always had like a mission statement. And so, like, you know, my mission or purpose statement, I think it's changed over the years. You know, if you had asked me 2 years ago, Will, my mission statement would have been to, help people lose weight and feel phenomenal and create impact in their families. And then it transitioned again to waking up every morning and becoming a better dad, because I was not doing what I should have been doing in the husband and fatherhood department. So then it was me really waking up saying, like, I'm going to be the most amazing father. I'm going to be dedicated. When things go wrong, I will be able to stand the storm and realize that all the gratitude, all the joy, all the problems that come into my family are on my shoulders, and I'm responsible for that. So the purpose statement has definitely changed for me, and or my mission statement, my purpose statement. It's changed mm-hmm. throughout the years for sure. And this is kind of like the newest one where that I've kind of reached that I'm at right now. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just asked that because I think it's so important to understand that you need to revisit this frequently. It's not something you just write and then throw it in your binder and you're good to go. I did that exercise again, checking it off the box. And so revisiting your purpose, I think, is also really important. I love to hear what other people's are.
Yeah, dude, that's good. Yeah, no, thanks for asking. All right, I'll wrap things up. Just the last couple questions and we'll wrap things up. And I'm curious, are there any choices or maybe one choice that you made in your life that you think made you who you are today?
Yes, I think it was deciding that I was going to go, no matter the recruiting, the lack of recruiting that I got, I was still going to go play basketball and see that through and do whatever I can to push myself to the highest level. And I think making that decision really put me on a path of, you know, some of my buddies I was hanging out with got into drinking and partying and drugs. And I know I probably would have gone down that path as well if I hadn't have made that decision in college, which then forced me, okay, this is kind of forming my identity. I'm the person that pushes past these obstacles. And then by playing basketball, I got put into contact by two mentors that I feel like also had a huge, huge impact on my life. My strength coach for 4 years at Virginia Tech, and then the head coach that gave me that book on the SEALs, which him not giving me that book or making that comment, don't think I probably would have ever even known what a SEAL was other than maybe watching a movie on it. But that one decision that I'm going to go see this through for 4 years, even if it means I'm just a walk-on, I'm going to get everything I got to work up to that starting and full scholarship. Just that one initial decision changed the trajectory, because then I met people along the way that really supported me. They put me on an even better path and, you know, take it from there. But I think that was one instrumental decision I'm in.
Yeah, 100%. What kind of rituals or practices do you do on a like regular basis? Is it 4 a.m. cold plunging, gratitude journaling? Like, what does Will the Thrill like to do?
Yeah, not 4 a.m. I would say probably 6 a.m. And it's not like the coldest shower where I'm building up or a cold plunge. I just do a cold plunge, a daily workout. So a cold plunge, a daily workout, daily walk with my dog, that really just sets my mind for the day. I think walking is another thing that's super underrated. And then I go into my workflow, do my 2 p.m. NSDR, non-negotiable, just have to do it, knowing that I just feel so much better and that it really boosts my productivity and focus afterwards. And then just being as present as I possibly can with my wife at the end of the day when we're having dinner. Just trying to put away distractions, not working during that time, just being fully present. And I think those are daily staples that really help my mental, physical health.
Yeah, dude, I love that. I was going to ask you a question about books, but I feel like I already know the answer. You'd probably tell me Viktor Frankl. And then what was that other book, Fearless?
Fearless. Yeah. Those are some of my top two recommendations. But I do like another book that I give out. It's, I think, targeted for the sport athletic community, but it really applies to everyone. And that's Train Your Brain Like an Olympian by J.F. Menard. I think that book has so many practical tools in it that you can just immediately implement in your life. And you can just turn to a page, learn one of the tools, and then just go ahead and implement it. Like, you don't have to read it like front to back. It's just such a practical book that I really enjoy. And I think it's really helpful.
Yeah, that's a great one. I never heard of that one, so I'll have to check that one out. Yeah. Dude, last but not least, Will Johnston, where can people connect with you, find out what you're up to, if it's on social media, or if they want to work with you, where can they connect and learn more about everything that you're up to?
Yeah, so I try to stay away from social media. It's just not really me. And so the biggest way that you can find me is just going to my LinkedIn, reaching out, Will Johnston. I will have my LLC that I just formed's website up sometime in the next week. So when that's formed out, I'll just shoot that over to you and people can find me that way. But that's about it.
Amazing, dude. Dude, man, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been fun and really enjoy what you put out and all you're about, man.
Thanks, brother.